Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this AudioCast 22, I discuss the sex scandal and what it's doing to the priesthood. A difficult topic, but please.
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, as we discuss the sex abuse scandal and another round of some of the most disgusting, horrific, and purely evil acts of violence against children. This sex abuse scandal, which doesn't seem to leave the Catholic Church's history, and it's just frankly disgusting, which is why I want to talk it out with another priest who is from the Diocese of Pittsburgh, where Cardinal Wuerl, who is now currently the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, D.C., but before that, he was in Pittsburgh as the bishop, and while he did some really good things to eradicate some of the abuses, there were also some missteps accordingly that kind of created more problems, and so people are wondering if he should step down from his position. Frankly, he's already made his letter of resignation a few years ago because he reached the age of retirement for a bishop, yet Pope Francis has kept him on, at least for now, to continue to lead in that position. What should he do? And more importantly, how is this taking a toll on our people? And especially on the priests in Pittsburgh, some of them who know did some most heinous crimes. And what does that do for the morale of other priests, including young priests? Which is why my special guest is Father Anthony Sharapa, who was just ordained a couple years ago. Here's a young man who is doing hopefully good work for the church. But you know, when you hear of all of the priests who are just tearing down his good work, how does he handle it, and what does he say to his people? So just get ready for a deliciously deep discussion and to hear, in all honesty, what are the problems? Let's talk about what he went through in formation to make sure that we know the church is doing all she possibly can to prevent something like this from happening. But is it even possible to prevent it from happening? And more importantly, how is he dealing with it, and how is he helping his people? So when we return, we will discuss with Father Anthony Sharapa of the Diocese of Pittsburgh. I'll be honest with you, I don't know him personally, but I've kind of paid attention to some of his tweets on Twitter. And so you might actually get some bite-sized tweetable inspiration, but definitely in this deep dish discussion when we return for more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. This episode is brought to you by SoCor.com. It's a movement that pairs strengthening, stretching, and functional movement with prayers of the rosary, a sensory experience combining candlelight music, scripture, and movement to nourish body, mind, and soul, and to encourage deeper reflection on the virtues of the rosary. This is not affiliated with any other exercise discipline. It's certainly not yoga. It's not the poses or Sanskrit referenced in any time. SoCor is simply an invitation to discover the beauty of the rosary, a gentle path to grow in virtue and interior peace. So yeah, it's kind of like truly exercising body, mind, and soul, and they've got a ton of products featured that look very Catholic, very Christian, but most importantly, very healthy. You can attend a live soul core class, and you'll also be able to get news from their latest blogs. And then if you take a look at their website, soulcore.com, you will see just a bunch of women being very healthy and making sure that as they nourish their soul, they're also exercising the body. Learn more about this amazing movement at soulcore.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake for this deep dish discussion. And I'm so grateful to actually have a brother priest willing to talk about these issues, Father Anthony Scirappa, who is a priest of the Diocese of Pittsburgh. As I mentioned, he's a young priest ordained only 2 years from the time of this recording. The reason why I'm inviting him on, as I mentioned in the introduction, is because he is somebody who can at least share what the feelings are that people are going through in the Diocese of Pittsburgh, knowing that Cardinal Wuerl, who was the bishop there, is now in Washington, is part of the discussion. And so, first of all, Father Anthony, thanks for joining me on the show.
Hey, happy to be here.
Great. Let me ask you, just right off the bat, after the news broke about Cardinal Wuerl, what was kind of your sense of it all? You're a young priest. You've kind of dealt with some of the issues regarding child clergy, sexual abuse, and the scandal. But what was it like for the people in Pittsburgh, at least from your experience as a parish priest?
You mean like the grand jury report when that came out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we knew it was coming out. We had been kind of prepared, saying, you know, this is going to be really tough. This is going to be really bad. And you think you're like ready for it. But then it came out, and I downloaded it, and I started reading. And to be honest, I could only read so much before I got, like, sick. You know, you get physically overreading the terrible things that happened. And my initial reaction as I read it was, this is so terrible, and people are going to be so hurt. Am I going to be a good enough priest to help people through this? Like, am I holy enough? Am I good enough to help people through this? But to be honest, I only had a few hours because I had to say Mass for the Feast of the Assumption. So you have to switch gears right away and get back into that. So it was a crazy day when everything began to break.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it strange that all of this happens on a feast day when we talk about Mary's body going up into heaven because she did God's holy will, not just in her soul, but in her body as well. And there are just so many priests, and maybe that's not true, but there are certainly a good number of priests who have just done such terrible things. As a young priest, what is it like for you? Now, you said that you got sick reading the grand jury report, but what is it doing for you as a priest? And you can say to yourself, you know, am I being a good enough priest? The answer is probably not, but at least you're trying. You know, I hate to say it. What's been going on in your heart and mind as a young guy, young priest?
I mean, because I began discerning, knowing that scandals have happened in the past, but what was tough about this was my home. These were my people. These were Pittsburgh priests in there. And so it made everything just far more real than it had been in the past and really brought me face to face with that evil. And it was like the wind got knocked out of me, to be honest. It's not like I doubted my vocation at all or anything like that, but just...
Now, yeah, let's talk about that. That's exactly where I wanted to go next. It's you said in your previous response how you had kind of gone through seminary understanding sexual abuse and the crisis. For just my listeners, because a lot of people don't know what a seminarian goes through, let's just walk through your vocational discernment and how this all impacted. And folks, the reason why I'm even talking about this is to let you know that while these problems will always be with us because they are screwed up minds and broken people, and there is a permissiveness of sexuality without responsibility, even in today's world, it was even worse back in the day. But you, Anthony, Father Anthony, you chose to become a priest even though you knew that these scandals existed. So let's just go and walk back from your vocation story. You were ordained a priest 2 years ago, so it's 2018 right now. When did you enter seminary? What year was that?
2008, 2009. For me, it was right after I graduated high school.
Okay, you just graduated from high school and you enter into college seminary. And just for our listeners, because many will ask, and as I, as a former formator for a major seminary, would ask, are you even mature enough to be able to enter into this discussion about priestly celibacy? What could you say to people about that question?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And yeah, I definitely think I am because of how two things. One, the seminary formation program. And then, to be honest, how seriously I took the program. You know, when you first enter seminary, I took this psychological exam. It was literally over 1,000 questions I had to answer. And then there were psychological, you know, interviews.
What was the nature of those questions? Just to make sure for our listeners, they know it wasn't like, you know, did they ask questions like, do you see God? I mean,
yeah, I mean, there was every single thing. There was, and they would ask the same question, like, in different ways. A lot of them were like, do you feel like someone's watching you? Do you not feel like someone isn't watching you? And, like, stuff like that.
So real quick, what did you say to that? I just need to know. Do you feel like someone's watching you?
You know, because my thought was, like, God's watching me. But I feel like if I write down that someone's watching me, that's a bad answer, right? So I said no.
And so what about regards to sex? Because this is what we're talking about. What kind of questions were they asking you? And sorry if I'm probing, but the only reason why is just to let people who are listening know the church does take very seriously the sexual identity and the psychosexual identity of a priest to be able to make this promise of celibacy. So what kind of questions did they ask you about that?
Yeah, so I don't remember like specifics, but there definitely were questions about orientation, about desires, about thoughts. I remember the psychologist asking me similar questions to that. So those were all things that were addressed in those tests.
Did that make you feel uncomfortable when you were, you know, that young? You were just, 19 years old, right?
Oh, yeah, it was terrible. Because, you know, you want to be a priest and you're real excited about it, and then you just get destroyed by all these questions, and they're intense and about your personal life, and you're like, oh, man, I didn't know that this was what something was going to be about.
Do you know why they may have asked you those questions? I mean, what would have been the purpose for all of that?
Yeah, I think they want to see if there's any sort of major problem or difficulty or disorder with your sexual life or your idea of sexuality. Of course, you know, I'm 18. I'm still growing up and integrating all that into my, you know, person. But to see if there's any, like, things that would disqualify me.
Now, you were 18 years old. Were you actually kind of you obviously had to be an active enough Catholic young man to want to even consider the priesthood. But what was it like in the culture of your day? What were your other friends doing? Were they as pure as the driven snow, or were they just like everybody else looking on the internet and just hooking up with their girlfriends or boyfriends?
I mean, yeah, I went to a public school, and so absolutely. I remember when I first started telling people I was entering seminary, I was getting ready for a math test, and I was trying to memorize some sort of equation. And then this girl behind me, sitting behind me, she taps me on the shoulder. And I turn around, and she looks at me, and she asks, without any preface, but don't you want to have sex? And I was like, lady, just to be honest, I want to pass this math test right now, and I can't deal with your question. I don't even know how to answer that right now.
Well, then let's ask the question. Let's just ask the question. Do you miss that? Do you miss that part? You're a priest ordained 2 years, and obviously you've given up that part of humanity. I mean, that's just part of human experiences. And again, I'm kind of pressing you for the sake of the listeners. You know, how do you respond to this? Like, come on, don't you want to have a relationship? And the reason why I ask this is because there are these brother priests of ours who have had screwed up relationships.
Yeah, so in like college seminary, it was difficult. It was very difficult. The part of you just wants to go out, be in college, you know, have relationships. But I think kind of like life, you sort of grow up. And not that there aren't those desires and that they don't like happen, but I'm also an adult man who has a vocation and a calling. And I'm very good friends with families who know me very well. And so I know how the relationships, they're really beautiful things, but they're also really difficult things. And how beautiful and amazing it is to have kids. And but also how like tiring and what a cross it is as well. So I think being in relationship with good families has really just kind of given me a good and holistic view of it all. To be honest, you know, I'm kind of happy where I am. You know, I had 8 years to decide whether or not this is the thing that I wanted, and the answer is yes, and it's, you know, still yes today.
That's beautiful. And first of all, thank you for your yes, but 8 years of seminary formation. Part of it was obviously getting to know the church and families and such like that, but we're just going to be talking very honestly. What kind of preparation did they give to you in regards to being able to maintain your celibate vocation? That's question number one. And then question number two is, what did you experience in seminary? Now, let's just hit on that question, and then we'll do the whole seminary thing. What did they do, the seminary, provide so that you don't grow up to be some weirdo priest like, unfortunately, some of our brothers?
Right, yeah. A lot of the seminary system that I was in was very much based around these meetings I would have with priests. So I had a meeting, a spiritual direction meeting and formation advising meeting. And so I would be talking with these priests like every week and telling them like what was going on and what was going on in school and what was going on in my, you know, heart and soul. I also asked to go through to see some counseling as well, just because, you know, going through this 8-year process, being 18, there was a lot that was going on. And I felt like I could use help from a professional in the, you know, psychological field. And the seminary totally supported me in that, and you know, financially supported me in that as well. So that was another thing. I think a lot of what seminary is like they give you the tools, but I think the seminarian has to like take it seriously. So a lot of it was on the seminary. A lot of it was on me. A lot of it is on the seminarian, I think.
Do you think a guy could kind of skate through and kind of hide and lie to formation directors and say, "Oh yeah, I'm not. I'm okay with my celibacy. I'm not looking at pornography. I'm super chaste." And all the while, they be living a double life. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
From guys I knew, no. I think everyone tends to do a little bit of that at times. But I'm not saying it's not possible, but the formation programs can be anywhere from 7 to 9 years. And my goodness, to hide that for that long, is it possible? Yes. Is it unlikely? I think it's unlikely.
Okay, so
that's just, you know, my perspective on it.
So the timing kind of will weed out, in a way, any people who are not living up to the standards expected of them by the church and, of course, the church's people. Now, as far as seminary is concerned, in your experience, we've read revelations of the quote-unquote Uncle Teddy, disgraced former cardinal Theodore McCarrick. I'm not throwing him under the bus. Look, he's a broken man, and the last thing I want to do is kick him while a guy is down. But he did some horrible things against seminarians and even some young priests. What was your experience as a young priest? I mean, I don't know who you are. I kind of don't even know what you look like. You know, just in full disclosure, I just discovered you on Twitter. So I met you online. I mean, it sounds so awkward, but I met you online and I don't really know you, but you seem like a person with an attractive personality, an attractive persona in all the best sense of the word. You know, you call yourself Pittsburgh's okayest priest, which just makes you funny and snarky. So you're probably very popular among young people. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm not blowing smoke up your cassock here. I'm just kind of just admitting that you're probably an attractive person for a good face for the church. Did you ever get hit on? What was it like in seminary? Did you ever feel like that you were kind of like you were asked to wear a gold cross because you could be, I don't know, someone's toy? I mean, this sounds disgusting, folks, and I even hate bringing it up, but I just want to be honest. What was it like for you, an attractive young person, young man, going into seminary?
Yeah, so I was, not to my knowledge, and I think I'd be pretty aware of it, I was not hit on by any seminarians, by any faculty. I didn't see any of that when I was in seminary. I'm not trying to discount stories, because there are stories of other people in seminaries in the same time I was there who experienced that. I just didn't. I had to deal with people outside the seminary who don't get the whole, celibate thing, you know, hitting on me on when I would go out and that kind of thing. So that's the thing you have to deal with. But as far as in the seminary from seminarians or faculty members, that just wasn't in my personal experience.
Did you ever experience any creepy priests, any creepy bishops who just kind of paid a little bit more attention to you? And the reason why I say that is because, unfortunately, I've met priests who have and seminarians who have. And you know what's really interesting? Anthony, they don't even want to talk about it. I mean, you're one of the few priests who's willing to actually talk about these issues honestly. And all I'm trying to do is not uncover it or expose it, but just be honest with it. I mean, have you seen any of that creepiness in your life?
In my life?
Oh, no, I'm talking about within the church, within the life of the church.
Yeah, within the church, yeah. You know, in minor seminary, there sometimes would be retired priests that would come over, and some of them you had maybe heard stories of, and there was, you kind of got a vibe, but, you know, this whole, you know, time spent with them would only be an hour, it would only be dinner. So we were just kind of bored of the whole thing anyway, so we just wanted to get out of there as soon as we could. So there was never any, like, you know, just on a practical level, there was never any, like, opportunity for anything like that. And in major seminary, there were like priests I didn't trust or didn't like, but it wasn't because of any like sexual advance or any kind of creepiness like that. It was just because I thought they were jerks. It wasn't anything more than that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is interesting, though, because while you may have quote unquote heard of the rumors or the stories that this guy is kind of creepy, do you know if there was anything done about it? I mean, was it ever raised? Did your class just actually point a finger and say, hey, Father Rector or Father Superior or Formation Directing Priest, this guy's creepy. I mean, Is that part of our culture in the Catholic Church? And I'm kind of getting to a point here. We kind of respect our authorities, even if they are creepy. But what in you would have, you know, been smart enough to avoid those things, or smart enough or keen enough to not get involved in this double life that some seminarians and priests have been involved in?
So as far as like knowing rumors about maybe certain guys, or some guys almost even making jokes about it, and these were men who were not in ministry, they were retired, they lived in a retirement home. So there was no like threat from them. You know, they could barely get around.
Yeah, you can outrun them. I get it.
So nothing from someone who was in active ministry or anything like that.
And so when you got into seminary in 2009, the first bombshell report came out in 2002. And how old were you in 2002?
How old was I? What, I don't know, 11, 13?
Oh, Jesus. So you didn't, none of
I'm
that.
I'm better at theology than I am at math. But yeah, I was, you know.
You were too young, and so you probably never even understood what the original John Jay Report and the Dallas Charter, these are the first, in 2002, the first wave of legal action against abusive priests. Did that mean anything to you back then? Probably not, correct?
No, it wasn't until I entered seminary that I learned a little bit more about that.
And when they entered into seminary, did they talk about it? What kind of lessons and trainings did they give you to say, here's what you can't do, here's what you can do, you know, just to protect yourself and to make sure that transparency is the name of our ministry?
Right. Yeah, it was so much a part of the culture that, you know, you are a public person. There may be this perception of you. You should not be alone with children. I mean, we had learned some of this from just volunteering in parishes. We had to go through this whole Protecting God's Children program. We had to watch these videos. It was always a part of, you know, everything we did, and it was very much ingrained.
Did people take it seriously, or like, oh God, this is one other hoop to jump through?
I mean, both. We all hated it because it's disgusting to have to face these things, and it's disappointing that there is this kind of almost feeling of mistrust. But we also knew that this is important, and this is what we have to do. And also, you know, just to be smart about it, also to not put yourself in a position where you might be falsely accused. It's just what you have to do now. And none of us liked it, but all of us knew it was important.
Okay, well, you're being very honest. And Father Anthony Sciarrapa from the Diocese of Pittsburgh, when we come back from this short break, I'm going to kind of ask you a bunch more questions. And this time after ordination, from this point on, the experiences you had as a young priest. And then, of course, we're going to just kind of talk about how people can handle this crisis and this situation more when we return for more Shoot the Shiitake with my special guest, Father Anthony Sciarrapa. And of course, me, your host, Father Leo, will be back in just a moment. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Shoot the Shiitake. And for our premium subscribers, that is people who make a donation of $10 or more each month, each week they receive in their inbox more audio content. And this week, I'm proud to say, Father Anthony Sciarrapa is going to be sharing his vocation story. Even though he grew up in a mixed religion household, he was actually called to the priesthood by a very special person in his life. And guess what? It wasn't a priest. And guess what? It was a lay woman. And so you'll hear that fantastic story of how he received his call to the priesthood, and also learn about his other fantastic ministries that not only keep him connected and grounded in reality, it makes him a very excellent priest. He's known on Twitter as Pittsburgh's okayest priest, but you'll hear how he's better than okay. Thank you to our premium subscribers. And to donate, just simply go to fatherleofeeds.com/listen. And thank you for your support. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for part two of the deep dish discussion, just trying to be honest about the clergy abuse scandal. And I'm so grateful to have a brother priest who I don't even know who he is. And to be honest with you, it was tough for me to call him, being a Baltimore Ravens fan, and he's probably a Steelers fan from Pittsburgh. But in this case, we are truly united because we're just trying to be honest about the experiences regarding the sexual abuse scandal. Father Anthony Sciarrapa, thank you for staying on the line with me. And let me just go right into question number two. As a young priest, just newly ordained, this is going to sound kind of difficult, but Did you feel yourself being more separated from reality because a lot of people put priests on pedestals? Or did you feel more connected to reality as a young priest?
To reality of all the scandal?
No, just life, reality. You know
what? So yes and no. Yes and no. I am blessed to have good friends who have known me before seminary, during seminary, who have no problem making fun of me, who have no problem just like...
What do they call you, Father, or do they call you Anthony?
They call me Anthony or various other nicknames for me.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Seminary Scrappy.
Okay, well...
People can't pronounce my last name, and so I'm sometimes Father Scrappy to them, depending on who it is. So just like real normal people. And so they keep me humble, and they keep me... Because there are people who like think that priests are... All priests are absolutely perfect, and...
Do you know some priests who think that? Do you know some priests who actually, after they became ordained, they kind of are separated from reality? Fact is, you have a housekeeper, probably. You have someone making your meals. You have your insurance taken care of. You don't pay for anything. I mean, could that removal from reality be part of the problem of the sex abuse scandal? Because some of it is connected to abuse of power.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It could be. I could totally see how that could happen. If you want to be treated like a king in the castle as a priest, you can manage that, I think. You can find the people you can surround yourself with, parishioners who will treat you that way. I mean, you will find parishioners who know you're a good priest, but you're still just, you know, a guy. But if you want to surround yourself with those people, you absolutely could. I have no doubt.
Yeah. And you said that you kind of experience some people putting you on a pedestal, and then you have good friends who keep you humble. What does that do when people put you on a pedestal? How do you prevent that from just actually getting to your head? You know, here's my philosophy. If you're a bishop, you need to be doing dishes every now and then. You need to be scrubbing floors. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, and I'm being very serious because I get disgusted by some of them that look like princes or princesses.
My still, thank goodness, my gut reaction is I still get kind of bothered by that and grossed out by that. I think for me, having a spiritual director that I see still every month and going to confession once a month is huge for me, just to like face my own sinfulness and my own screw-ups. To be honest about that is incredibly important for me.
And what's your thoughts now? Let me ask you, what's your thoughts? Because you're just being honest here, and I'm grateful that you struggle and you have someone to talk to. It's called accountability, and it's called being honest with somebody. But do you also talk to somebody who doesn't have the seal of secrecy? In other words, when I go to confession, I went and confess a sin, and we'll just talk about whatever it is. It might be a sexual thought, a sexual, you know, a moral sexual sin. You can talk to a priest in confession, and they can't say a dang thing about it unless they go to hell, you know, so it's under the seal of confession, so we're not going to do it. But are you able to talk with good friends who don't have a seal of confession, who if they kind of detect that you're, I don't know, doing something that's not healthy to your priesthood, they can tell the bishop? I mean, do you have a circle of people that you can be honest with outside of confession? Because some people hide behind the seal.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So there's two groups of people. One, there's a priest small group that I'm in. There's like 9 of us who get together and talk once a month or so. So there's that. And then the other kind of group of people, I have 3 very good friends who are in seminary with me, who left seminary and are now married and have these beautiful families. So they kind of get it a little bit, but they're also outside it. They know the bishop and they know me. And they're people I trust very much so. So I think those two groups of people do a good job keeping me accountable. And they've they've all been calling me during all this time as well, once all the scandal broke, and checking up on me. And so that's just another proof of the fact that they are watching out for me and making sure that I'm doing all right.
Yeah, they care about you enough, and that's a good thing. And I think that's one of the problems. Sexual sins, all sexual sins, are actually connected to pride and selfishness. So just, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it straight, that the abuse that these predators, these horribly evil acts, are done by people who really have psychosexual irregular developments. And on top of that, sin and evil is working in their life. But part of it is they're disconnected from reality. So let me just ask you, as a young priest, what are your thoughts on what did the church do wrong? How did we screw this up so bad? I mean, like, do you sometimes like shake your head and wonder, like, this is not that hard, bishops? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think a part of it isn't this attitude that we didn't want to believe it was really happening. I think, you know, the priests that were committing these terrible acts, they knew other priests who were in the hierarchy or whatever, and you just, even if you hear it, even if you see the evidence, there's this part of you that doesn't want to let that click and really realize that evil. And you want to hide it away because you just don't want to face it. I think it's a lack of courage on a lot of people who should have had the courage to say, you know, I thought I knew who this person was and I was wrong. And I need to face this evil. I think a lot of it was that, this kind of willful ignorance.
Do you think that there's evil and malice on the part of the bishops to just say, you know, I'm just going to move him on just because I like the guy? I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, when you hear, when you even read just 100 pages of this, what, 1,000-page report or something like that, that it's just, it sounds like they were protecting evil. I mean, I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around it. I'd like to hear your thoughts as a young priest.
Yeah, I think there may have been some of that, you know, some other stuff of it was sometimes these guys were sent to psychiatric facilities and then the facility said they were okay and they're fixed, they're cured. And so figure, okay, reassign this guy, just not knowing the realities of how deeply seated this stuff is. I think part of it might have been that, like, oh, I know this guy. I was, you know, buds with him in seminary and he's probably all right. And you hear some of the reports of, like, even the family members' response to some of this abuse was, oh, no, it really couldn't have been the priest. You probably tempted the priest or something like that, too. So there's this whole cultural thing in the church that was going on that the priest couldn't have done this. And so there must be, you know, blaming even the victims. So there's a whole lot of cultural stuff that was really screwed up.
Yeah, the culture has definitely changed right now from a time when sexuality was not discussed. This is all in the, like, the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And strangely, during that time of the year, there was a sexual revolution going on that just allowed for sexual promiscuity without any responsibility. I'm sure a lot of that infected the minds of weak, broken, immature, psychosexually undeveloped priests. Again, I didn't call them horrible people, but what they did was certainly horrible. What are you saying to your people as you're kind of going through this? What's been your experience as a parish priest, knowing that people are looking at you a little differently these days?
I spent my entire homily preaching about all this just a few days ago, and I basically went through a lot of stuff that we just talked about, my time in seminary, my experience of this, how terrible this really was. And my emphasis to the people was that we do not put our faith ultimately in popes or bishops or even priests, that our faith must be in Jesus Christ. So that's kind of the focus I'm taking right now. I'm meeting with parishioners this week who want to talk to me about all of this.
How many people are coming to you? How many people are...
Right now, this week, about three people approached me. I suppose there will be more after.
And these three people, not trying to name them, are these just like needy parishioners who just are like, oh, I have a chance to talk to Father Sharapa now? Or are these like,
I know who those ones are. I know who those ones are, and these are not them.
Okay. These are just normal people. And are they older or are they younger? I mean, are you finding yourself... Because, look, I was out of the country in a very secular other country doing a wedding mass and, the weekend after the scandals hit. And I preached a wedding mass and a homily to just a bunch of secular people. They all came up to me and was like, man, you're an awesome priest. I'd love to hear more about this stuff. I mean, I didn't talk about the scandals. It was their freaking wedding, so I'm not going to talk about it that way. But, I mean, do you find it... Are we making too big of a deal of this, or is this problem like in a very small bubble known as the Catholic Church? And I mean, I wonder if we're just talking it to death, because I'm looking at the highlights in the news and there may be like one or two line on a few places and it might be like a 3-minute report on the news. It's horrible, trust me. But are we making a bigger deal of it all? And I would just love to hear about it, or are we not making a big enough deal of it is another question.
I think it should be acknowledged in a serious way by everybody. That being said, I think we also have realized that our parishes are not the internet. Our parishes are not the news. Our parishes are our people that are right in front of us. And sometimes we become so inundated with all these talking points and what's going on Twitter that we forget that, like, oh, wait, I need to minister to these people. What are they feeling? Not just what, you know, the zeitgeist is.
Mm-hmm. That's a very important point, and I'm glad that you brought it up. Everyone should be talking about this, but in the right way and with the appropriate level of propriety, because I can't, I mean, look, you had children in your congregation. I mean, did you start talking about how some predatorial priests were putting crosses on children, you know, to kind of mark them as good victims? I mean, did you talk about...
I did not do that.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because there are some priests...
About, you know, abuse happened. So the adults will get it, the children won't.
Did you act defensive? Did you take a defensive posture and say, oh, you know, well, priests are only 0.1% of the abuse, and, you know, there's more abuse happening in fathers?
No, it's not the time for that. Not now.
Okay, tell me why.
Those are all important points, but right now it's a time for, like, just let's deal with the raw emotion. Let's deal with people we're dealing with right now. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, the diocese of, you know, Pittsburgh now is certainly not the diocese it was, you know, 30 years ago. And things are different now and all that. That's all important information. It's all true. But right now we have to deal with the pain that people are feeling.
And what pain are people feeling? Can you articulate what that pain is?
It's a feeling that you've been betrayed by the people who are closest to you. Because priests aren't just men, they're your father. And to betray the trust, and to know that that's happened, is devastating because the priesthood is so close to our people. Our people love priests, and they still do. But knowing that that could be betrayed, it's the best, one of the best things about their faith and their religion has been so twisted and so distorted by these men who have done these evil things that there's a feeling of disgust, anger, betrayal, sadness. There's also a feeling people are angry that it feels like now the church is just under attack again, and they're tired of being under attack, and they're tired of being...
Do you feel that? Do you feel that the church is being attacked?
I mean, the church is always being attacked. Isn't that part of what makes us the church?
I think? Yeah, hello. I mean, we all wear a cross, in which is a target. You know, so, but I mean, in this case, do you think that celibacy is being mocked?
I mean, it certainly is. And so there are people who are genuinely concerned from... I think there's people genuinely concerned from the outside who are like, is this celibacy thing a good thing or a bad thing? But I think there's also a lot of people who will take any advantage, any moment, any failure to rip down celibacy because they're afraid of their own sexuality, to rip down the church because they hate the church. So,
and then you talked about, you just used the word like their own sexuality. Your thoughts on gay priests or homosexually inclined clergy, should they be ordained? Should they not be ordained? Because this is just coming up and surfacing, and we're hearing very prominent Catholic writers and social media people just basically saying that the problem is the majority of this is homosexually charged. As a young priest, as a normal-ish, as Pittsburgh's okayest priest, if you were entrusted with seminary formation and you met a guy who was gay, he demonstrated homosexual tendencies. He even admits it in his psychological reports. What do you say to him?
Yeah, so I'm still trying to discern what the church is saying about this. And I've been talking about this with a lot of my brother priests because, you know, I know men who have same-sex attraction, who are living a celibate lifestyle, who are living what I see as a heroic life, who are good men, who desire to be spiritual fathers, who have gone through a lot of pain in their life because of this thing. And part of my gut says to say that they can't be a priest because of what turns them on, part of me feels like that can't be right. And so is that what the church is saying? I'm not sure yet. That's something I'm still praying over. Because, and I think we all know people in our family and friends who are gay, and they're not predators, you know? So to say that this is definitely something we need to talk about, and it's definitely an issue. But to say that this problem boils down to just gay priests, that seems wrong to me. That's not it.
What should happen to these bishops and priests? You know, and I'm even thinking, did you ever know Cardinal Wuerl, who was a former bishop in Pittsburgh before he was moved to Washington and elevated now as a cardinal? And currently, there's just news of him having to step down for misappropriation or mishandling. He himself did not abuse it, ladies and gentlemen, but obviously he moved some priests around, perhaps because he was given the okay, you know, and because he just didn't have sufficient evidence. I have no idea. We're still on the lookout for figuring out that problem. But what do you think bishops should do? Should they be resigning? And then, I know this is not your job, but what do you think the Pope should do about this? What do you think the... Hey, on top of that, what should God do about this? Go ahead,
exactly.
Pittsburgh's
so
okayest priest.
2 years, and let me tell you what these bishops should do. Okay.
Well, actually, that's exactly what I want to hear. In fact, because you've got the zeal and you've got the chutzpah, I would love to hear what bishops need to do or to be done to them.
Yeah. Okay, so I think there is... When something terrible like this happens, we want to blame an enemy. We want to find a scapegoat. Now, there are certainly people who have done wrong things and they need to be held accountable for that. But I look at, from what I know, and this is, I feel I can get all the flack for this, but looking at Bishop Boyle, what he did in our diocese, it seems like, from what I understand, he was very far ahead of what a lot of other bishops were doing in comparison. That being said, he also, it looks like he screwed up. So should he be held accountable for those screw-ups? Yeah. Was he the worst bishop in this crisis? I don't think so. So what should he do? I mean, he's already sent in his letter. He's past retirement age, right, for years now. He already has been.
A couple of years, yeah.
So what do I think, and do I think mass resignation of bishops will help things? Man, I don't know. I do think what we do need are public acts of penance. Bishops and priests, we all share the same priesthood. And so we all share, in a certain sense, a responsibility for this, even if we've done nothing. You know, this is our priesthood, and we need to repent. And so I think penance services and prayer, and maybe, you know, it'd be wonderful if Pope Francis said, you know, maybe even a year of penance. And I know some Catholics are like, well, we shouldn't be blaming ourselves for what a few people did. And it's like, we are the body of Christ. And if one part of the body is in pain, the entire body is in pain. So I think on a practical level, we need to pray more. We need to do penance. We need to acknowledge the fact that men have done terrible things in the church. As far as resignations and stuff, man, I don't know. I've never been one to follow church politics. I know the name of my bishop and maybe a couple others, but that's never been my forte. So that's why I see things.
Well, this has been amazing. Father Anthony Sciarrapa from the Diocese of Pittsburgh joining me for a deep dish discussion here on Shoot the Shiitake. And if you want to hear more about Father Sciarrapa, then please be a premium sponsor. With just $10 or more, you'll be able to get premium content sent directly to your inbox. One of those particular premium content is going to be hearing more about Father Sciarrapa as the pierogi priest and also as Pittsburgh's okayest priest. And then we're going to hear a little bit more about how he discerned his vocation and what he's doing with his new podcast, his new show, which is called what?
It's called Clerically Speaking. You can find us on Twitter at @clericalpod. We just got started, and it's me and Father Harrison, this great priest from Canada. And we're talking about stuff on Twitter and talking about current issues in the church.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen, and you're going to hear more about that. But right now, I am going to close this segment off, and when we return, you will hear my carryout order. What did I learn from Father Sciarrapa, Father Anthony Sciarrapa? But I do want to ask you this. Father Anthony, you don't know me, do you?
I really don't.
Exactly. What can I do as a priest? How can I be a good priest for you? I mean, and I close off all of my segments this way. It's like, how can I be a good priest for you?
You can be a good priest for me, and I think for other priests, by reaching out to other priests. I think that's the biggest struggle, at least for a diocesan priest, is that we become very isolated in our parishes. Even our good friends, even if they're only a half hour down the road, we rarely meet them. So just reaching out to your brother priests and forcing them, like you've got free time. You don't have to be working all the time. Come, let's hang out, let's get a drink, something like that. I think that's one of the most important things priests can do for each other.
Dude, I love it. So I'm going to make you a promise. I mean, I know you don't know who I am, but your dad is a fan of mine. At least I'll say that, right? I mean, well, let's just say this, that the next time I make my way to that horrible Steelers town that you call your diocese, Pittsburgh, I'm going to get in touch with you. We're going to make dinner at a rectory. We're going to invite your priest friends over, and we're going to shoot the shiitake. So when we come back, more deep dish discussion, and again, you'll be able to hear more about Father Sciarrapa in a premium content, which is called Learning from Leftovers, but we'll return in just a minute. And thanks to our sponsor, SoulCore.com, a movement to nourish body, mind, and soul. And I'm so grateful for their sponsorship because I get a lot of questions asked me about, is it okay to do yoga? And there are certainly questions about that. But you know what? SoulCore.com answers those questions and provides not only a spiritually safe, but truly encouraging atmosphere where you can exercise yourself, body, mind, and soul with latest blogs on health and lifestyle with testimonials of how SoulCore products have helped them. All you've got to do is visit our sponsor, SoulCore.com, a movement to nourish body, mind, and soul. Fresh. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake for the carry out order here. Thanks to my guest, Father Anthony Sharapa. You know, he's a young priest, only ordained 2 years at the time of this recording, but he's had to deal with some very horrible things that have been happening in the priesthood. And the reason why I wanted to invite someone like him is because he is young. He can at least give us a fresh understanding of what it was like in seminary. More importantly, as a young priest, he has to grow up. And I think if there's any particular carry-out order, something that I learned from my conversation with Father Anthony, is that, you know, we as a church have to grow up. I mean, we really do. And we have to grow up quickly. And in this day and age of digital communication, where things are just happening in rapid seconds, we're getting news from around the world in literally seconds, and even in some cases, milliseconds. How do we process all of this? So I am never in any way going to make an excuse for any of these horrific things that people, priests and bishops, have done to harm the dignity of the human person. They've committed grave, not only sexual sins, but they've broken the most basic common laws of human decency by creating literally a sex scandal ring in the Catholic Church. And it just makes me sick. But hearing the way Father Sharapa was talking about it at least helps. You know, he mentioned that he has to allow people to experience the raw emotion. I can't tell you, I've received about 6 or 7 email from people who've just expressed pure, absolute disgust with the Catholic Church. And the last thing that I should do is be defensive. So, you know, don't defend the Catholic Church's horrific actions. We don't have a great record when it comes to this issue. We have an amazing record when it comes to, like, saints living out their faith and doing amazing things on behalf of the poor. But let's just admit it. We don't have a great record right here. So if the Catholic Church is going to have any type of credibility when it comes to talking about the sex abuse scandal, then one of the things we've got to do is just allow people to just express their emotion and don't cut them off. I'm trying not to cut people off, but just let them say what they feel. You know, and it was funny because in seminary, at least when I was being formed, this was in the 90s, we kind of made fun of feelings. We didn't talk about the way we felt. And trust me, my dear brother priests and my dear listeners, if we don't talk about what we're feeling, it is going to come up and bite us on the ass and get kicked in the ass, to be perfectly honest with you. And that's kind of what's happening right now. Honestly, if in the 60s and in the 70s, if we allowed priests to have conversations about how they were feeling, they probably would not have been ordained a priest and we wouldn't be where we are right now. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, this time of our American history, at least, was a time of sexual promiscuity. It was, you know, sex without responsibility. I'm sure some of that crept into the Catholic Church's mentality. If you think about what the priesthood is a fraternity ordained for the ministry of Jesus Christ, which means to a large degree, we have authority. Just when I wear my Roman collar, we have a certain level of authority. And so if you get a guy whose mind is completely screwed up because of the sexual underdevelopment, psychosexual underdevelopment, you know, we had like literally boys who were in high school go into seminary and become priests. They never actually lived their life. They never actually lived a maturing life. And so you have a priesthood, a sacred institution that has great authority, but you have a bunch of immature men, psychosexually underdeveloped men, going into the priesthood and thinking that they have the authority over someone. Then guess what's going to happen? Abuse is going to happen. And I think it's an institutional problem. And so we need to correct it from the very start of their desire to become a priest. We have to be more clear with making sure that they are mature enough to handle it. Will they know everything? No, which is why I'm grateful that Father Sharapa said that at some point in his life, he had to just grow up. He just had to grow up and realize that your penis does not have to take over your heart or your mind. And if it does, you need to leave the priesthood immediately, or you need to leave seminary immediately. So I really appreciate him saying that we should not be defensive of what people are going through. Certainly there are going to be some who are going to use this to attack the celibate priesthood. And that's fine. But let's just admit it. There are more celibate priests doing good for the church than there are bad priests who are harming the church. And the fact is, you know, after the weekend that this crisis occurred, I've been seeing on social media especially how so many people are coming up to their priests and saying, thank you for your leadership and for your compassion and for, you know, speaking about this. We have to be more honest. We have to be more willing to speak about these issues in appropriate ways. In a previous podcast, I mentioned how if a priest is just going to start talking about it from the pulpit, you got to be real careful because there are going to be a lot of young people that are going to be there as well. I also appreciated the fact that he didn't know what to do with this scandal. He knows not to commit it and he knows to condemn it. It's kind of interesting that as a Catholic priest, we can actually say critical things of our leaders. Will a Muslim be able to say that about their imam? You know, will a Jewish person sitting in their congregation be able to say that about a rabbi? Because I can tell you that this scandal happens in other areas. But thankfully, we as Catholic members, even if we're on the low end of the totem pole, we have the ability and the right and therefore the responsibility to speak out against it, which is exactly what many priests and many parishioners are doing. They're not leaving the Catholic Church. They're criticizing it in order to make it better, because even our bishops need to be critiqued, which is probably the other thing. You know, while he sees himself as low on the totem pole, so to speak, Father Sharapa was at least willing to kind of say that one of the things that he is kind of going through himself is just being able to say he doesn't know what to do. You know, he was at least willing to say that homosexuality for him wasn't the problem in the Catholic Church, because we know there are a lot of gay priests who do great work, you know. And so I'm not going to jump on this archer conservative bandwagon. I'm pretty conservative, but I'm not going to jump on the archer conservative bandwagon and say that it's just because you're a gay priest, because we know that that's not true, because we know that there was some heterosexual abuse that occurred as well. But he also said that he didn't know what to do with bishops. You know, some of them just don't know what to do themselves. You know, again, many of the bishops, and this is no disrespect to bishops, many bishops have not had a real job. When I say real job, I'm talking about a job where they have to work in order to get paid. You know, because again, as a diocesan priest and as a bishop, you just have a pool of money given to you. But some of them have worked professional careers in the past, and they take those skills, thankfully, into the ministry and the priesthood now and in their office as bishop. But many of them just, when have they been taught how to do, you know, administration? Many of them haven't had courses in management and administration. Many of them haven't probably had relationships with women. Some of them probably just went from one thing to the next, and they maybe never had a serious relationship. And so when it comes to this kind of decision-making process in regards to what should we do with bishops? I mean, are we going to try to fire them? You know, in the case of Cardinal Wuerl, for example, he already sent his retirement in to the Holy Father, and the Pope has kept him on. So the idea that we kind of function as like a normal business, that analogy just can't happen. We just don't have that same analogy. And so what we've got to do is do, I think, what Father Sharapa recommended, to be more reflective and to really enter more seriously into penance, to actually do more penance, like fasting, like extra prayers and vigils. And, you know, let's return to personal discipline to keep us on track. So here's the things that I learned from Father Sharapa. Even though he is 20 years younger than I am willing to listen to him and learn from his young priestly zeal how to get this ship. And I didn't say S-H-I-T. I didn't say my shiitake. I said ship as in like a boat. Back on track. Well, let's make sure that we're not going to be defensive. Let people experience and share what their feelings are in a raw way. Let's get to become more normal again. Like, be connected to reality, people. Again, you've heard me say it before. If you're a bishop, please wash some dishes for your dinner party. Don't leave it to like other people. Get in the kitchen, please. wash some dishes, scrub some floors, learn how to like be a normal person and not live like a prince in a castle, so to speak. And then the other thing that we need to do is to admit that we just don't know everything. You know, back in the day, there was not enough psychological testing and legal protections back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We've got them now. We need to employ them. And so I think hearing from a young priest was super helpful. Talking to a joyful priest helped me to put in perspective that all the struggles that a priest is going through in light of this scandal, it's going to be with us forever. But at the same time, we need to just keep plugging along and, more importantly, just staying faithful. So between now and the next time we talk, I can't thank Father Sharap enough for being willing to join me on the show and just to share with me. And yeah, even to preach to me, his senior priest. And I hope that you enjoyed the Shuta Shiitake. Please stay faithful. Don't let this get you down. And more importantly, for the truth, we have to keep staying hungry. We'll see you next time on Shuta Shiitake. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shuta Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And thanks to our sponsor, SoulCore.com, a movement to nourish body, mind, and soul. It is a place where you can not only get their featured products and to read testimonials and even attend a live Soul Core class, you'll see how we are called to be temples of the Holy Spirit. And guess what? Soul Core helps you to understand what that means. And so for our advertisers, we thank you and we encourage you, our listeners, to be more involved in our movement, because we can get rid of a lot of the bullshitaki in this world if we're willing to have one conversation which leads to conversion. So thanks to all of our sponsors. You can learn more at fatherleofeeds.com/listen, and be sure to share this episode with others, and something as easy as subscribe to our podcast on any of your popular podcast platforms. And we will see you next week on Shoot the Shiitake.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.